The Good Food Hour are brought to you by the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Welcome into the KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing very well. A question for you and our listeners. Why is the Kentucky Derby only for three-year-olds? Why isn't it two-year-olds or four-year-olds?
That's a good question. You would know the answer.
I have the answer to that. Well, because Colonel M. Lewis Clark, who founded the Louisville Jockey Club in 1875, was intent on patterning the race after the Epsom Derby in England, which already was a classic race only for three-year-olds. So here we are, what, at the 149th annual Kentucky Derby next Saturday. So John and I were talking about the show, and I don't remember, it's probably you that came up with this. Like, why do you always wait till Derby to talk about the great foods and all the traditions surrounding Derby? Why don't we do it before?
So people can go gather ingredients.
Exactly.
They're mint for juleps.
Of course. And start their simple syrup for the mint juleps. And we thought, duh, after 37 years or so, we finally wised up and thought, so today we're doing our pre-Derby show with some of our great favorites from the past 35 years. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to a cookbook author and chef who has really written a sensational book. And both of us, when we received the book, we thought, oh, you know, another book about bourbon, and we'll flip through it. It's a terrific book.
It's everything you ever wanted to know, plus more.
It's a tour guide throughout Kentucky of bourbon. We'll talk to the chef and author, Edward Lee, in by 11:30. But we want to just tell you in advance how much we love this book. So first thing you need to do, of course, is start your mint juleps. Pretty soon. At least get your simple syrup done, which is basically infusing fresh picked mint in water and sugar and making a syrup.
And you muddle it. That wonderful word. It was where I first came across the word muddle. What does that mean?
Well, you use a special tool called
a muddler.
A muddler, which will run you probably $10 or $12. And it's just a very heavy piece of metal with a round knob on the bottom where you crush the mint into the bottom of the glass, releasing the volatile essence of the mint, so it infuses into your water and sugar. And that's really the basis of your mint julep that gives it its wonderful
flavor.
So
I have a culinary question. Once you make the muddle of mint, how long will it last?
I think it will last, at least a week. It doesn't degrade as far as I'm concerned. What is your thought?
I don't know.
Once it's there, refrigerated, it will keep for a long, long time.
Well, it's one of those kinds of ingredients that if you have it, it's like, ooh, I may put a little bit of that in addition to the mint julep, into lemonade.
Well, and that's interesting you say that, because Edward Lee brings that up during his book, which you read, and he revealed that he's not a big fan of mint juleps. I mean, he'll have one, but he loves what you just talked about, the infusion itself for culinary applications, which is really cool. We'll get into that with Edward. So the first time we talked about, in depth, Kentucky Derby, you don't remember this, but I found this. You found this in our files. One of the first recipes you gave on this program was in 1990, and I have it here.
And was I alive then?
You were. It was your recipe for chocolate chip pie, which is a Derby pie.
Yeah.
But you didn't call it Derby pie.
But so, well, you'll have to fill people in on why you can't call it a Derby pie.
Because that's a trademark of the Kern family in Louisville, Kentucky, K-E-R-N, Kern's Kitchen. About 35, 40 years ago, they trademarked the term Derby pie, even though it's nothing more or less than either a walnut almond or pecan pie with melted chocolate chip. It's a fabulous, fabulous pie, don't get me wrong. But they've made $1 million business plus out of this, calling it Derby Pie. But many people serve this in restaurants around the country, but they call it anything but Derby Pie. Actually, there's one person that does call it anything but Derby Pie. It's Thoroughbred Pie. It's Run for the Roses Pie. It's Winner's Circle Pie. All kinds of riffs on it.
But so does this recipe I gave you, does it qualify?
Oh, it's called chocolate chip pie.
Yeah.
That's as generic as can be. But it's got all the the main players, a couple eggs. And I'm glad that you pointed out in your recipe a half cup, quarter pound of butter or margarine. Thank you for doing that, because in many traditional pie recipes, especially Derby Pie, margarine is the preferred fat instead of butter. You also add sugar, of course, and vanilla. A tablespoon or two of bourbon whiskey, got to have that. And then a little bit of flour, and then a cup of chopped walnuts or almonds or pecans. And then ingredient, semi-sweet chocolate chips. I like semi-sweet. Some people swear by bittersweet. Everyone's got their own riff on it. And then just a regular pie shell of choice. And that's pretty much it.
So can we share the recipe with listeners?
Well, certainly we can. Okay. I'm sure you don't still have this.
I don't think I do. It doesn't sound familiar.
34 and a half years ago.
Yeah.
But I bet you could recreate it. Did you?
Maybe.
We'll work on that, okay?
Okay.
So I know I skipped ahead to dessert. I'm sorry for that, but I had to bring that up. And then, of course, in 2000, and May 4th, which is actually next Saturday, was our big first Meals on Wheels Derby dinner that we did along with some great chefs for the Council on Aging, that wonderful fundraiser that featured all kinds of great people, including you, the SRJC culinary students with Michael Salinger, Jeff Medora, chef of John Ash and Company. He started off with blackened catfish salad with cucumbers and avocado. That sound good?
It does.
And then the entree was Dan Berman. He did corn-crusted chicken and a thyme cream gravy with wilted southern greens and roasted garlic mashed potatoes.
Yummy.
Dessert was Condra Eastley of Patisserie Angelica and Kath Burgett.
Yeah.
SRJC, and Tante Maria, culinary instructor, and she did a crisp apple tart with bourbon pecan ice cream. Come on.
Whoa.
Is that a great meal?
I'd like to go get that now.
Wouldn't that be?
Yeah.
If there was a restaurant that served that meal, they would have a line out the door.
So, listen, chefs.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, there used to be some real southern restaurants in Santa Rosa, and they've kind of gone by the wayside. And of course, Sweet Tea's, which is probably the most southern, moved up to Windsor.
Yeah.
And there's lines out the door all the time. They're doing really great, and they deserve their success. So one thing that should be on your table to start your meal has to be two items. Benedictine is number one, and we're not talking about the green liqueur. We're talking about the dip called Benedictine. And the other one is pimento cheese, those two items. And I know you have written about Benedictine. We both made Benedictine, but a lot of people, I know even listening to the show, have never heard of Benedictine.
And it's still the most popular way to start a meal.
And it is still very much indigenous to Louisville, Kentucky, where it was invented over 120 years ago or so in 1893 by a woman named Jenny Benedict. Yes, she was a Louisville, Kentucky caterer, and she had a sandwich shop, and she decided to create this own little spread to serve at her restaurant. And it's basically a cucumber-based spread with cream cheese, a little bit of yellow onion that's grated. I like to put in a little bit of green food coloring, so kill me.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Just a drop. And a little bit of mayonnaise and a little bit of Tabasco sauce. That's really all that belongs in Benedictine. I grate the cucumber, and then I put it in a cheesecloth or a stocking and wring the heck out of it, because what you don't want is the cucumber itself. You just want, no, I'm sorry, what you want is the cucumber itself.
Yeah.
You don't want the juice.
Yeah.
Juice is really bitter. So you drain off the juice. You add the cucumber. I like to add a little bit of onion in that. So I do the same thing with the onion, and I wring that out. I discard the onion, but I keep the juice.
Oh.
Now, this is really important.
Yeah.
For the onion, you keep the juice, throw away the solid. For the cucumber, you keep the solid and throw away the juice. Got that?
Yeah.
Okay. Add some of your cream cheese, a few ounces, maybe a quarter of a pound, a little bit more, a couple tablespoons of mayonnaise, a little bit of Tabasco sauce, and then of course, your dollop or drip of yellow, of green food coloring.
And this goes on a little
crack
toast or something?
A little sandwich rye.
Yeah.
A lot of the bakeries in Louisville make green and pink bread during Derby. And you add it, and then you do a checkerboard cut.
Yeah.
You spread the cream cheese, so you have little finger sandwiches, so they're very brightly colored. And sometimes what you do, well, my mom used to do this, she made Benedictine sandwiches, put them on the pink sandwich bread, and, of course, the cucumber Benedictine put them on the, I'm sorry, the reverse is the... The pimento cheese goes on the green.
Yeah.
Because that's a pimento cheese.
Contrasting color.
Contrasting, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. So Benedictine is really simple also. It's grated cheddar cheese. And then whatever else you want to add to it. And there's all kinds of discussion and all kinds of disagreements about what goes into pimento cheese bread. And I like to add sharp pimento cheese, just regular cheese, a jar of pimentos. It's really not rocket science.
Yeah.
Add that, put it together, a little bit of mayonnaise, a little bit of lemon juice, some red pepper, black pepper, and that's really about it. Some people like to add a little shot of Tabasco.
I remember growing up, I think it was Kraft who had in a jar pimento cheese that was pre-made.
That's right.
I don't see it anymore, but
I think that's probably no longer part of it. But it's
could
so
you
easy
use
to make.
Cheese Whiz?
You could. I know there's people out there that swear by Velveeta.
Yeah.
I don't. I swear at Velveeta. But I think you can invest in a pretty good medium or sharp grated cheese. Some people like to use a combination. And if you look at the internet, you'll find 100 different recipes.
Yeah.
Everyone's swearing their pimento cheese is the best. But make those two. It'll take you a half hour to make for your table with some nice rye and maybe some celery and sticks and things of that nature. Then you move on to the main course, which for my money, if you've got the money, country ham. Mm. Country ham belongs on your table.
So what is country ham? I think a lot of people don't know. They think, there's a ham in the market. I'll buy that. But country ham is a very special product.
It is a very special product that is raised with very special pigs that have a certain amount of fat on them. They're raised to full maturity, and then they are cut, butchered, and then soaked in a brine sauce, and then they are hung anywhere from 3 months to a year, and then lightly smoked. The moisture is drawn out. It has a beautiful mahogany skin and finish, and the flavor is incomparable. A lot of the weight, of course, a lot of the moisture is gone, so you're left with a very dense, delicious flavor that's just incomparable.
Yeah. Don't you have some favorite producers?
I do, and John and I have had a number of these producers on during the last 30 years or so. One of the best is Newsom's Country Ham, Nancy Newsom. She's out in Kentucky. In actually Princeton, Kentucky, as I recall. Another great producer was Father's Country Ham, Charles Gatton Jr. He's been around for like 150 years, this producer, and we had Charlie Gatton Jr. on talking about his country ham, too. There was also Broadbent Country Ham, which is from Cadiz, Kentucky, not Cadiz, C-A-D-I-Z, Cadiz, Kentucky. So those are three, Newsom's, Father's, and Broadbent. There's also Meacham's.
Yeah.
Remember we had the Meacham family on?
Right.
They were wonderful. Unfortunately, Rodman Meacham, the father, did pass away, but his daughter is continuing to make Sturgis, Kentucky-based country ham
and
from
Meacham's. So you can get all of these online?
All of them online.
Yeah.
They'll ship. It's very easy to order a country ham. There's other great ones. There's Penn County Hams that's really good, too, that I've had, but we didn't have them on the show. And they're from Campbellsville, Kentucky. And then there's Johnson's Country Ham, which is really great also, very highly respected. And they're from Union, Kentucky. And then there's Finchville, which is from Finchville, Kentucky, Country Ham also. So there's all these just...
And they're not cheap.
They're not. They're an investment, but they keep pretty much forever.
Yeah, right.
And you can also get slices. You don't have to order the entire ham. They're already cooked. You don't need to do all the soaking and cooking yourself when you get them. There's as much work or as little work as you want to do. But if you really want to do a traditional Kentucky Derby party, having a centerpiece of that Kentucky country ham is, I think, integral.
And what do you serve with it?
Well, I like corn pudding. That's one of my favorites is corn pudding. You have to have that. Biscuits, of course, because a beaten biscuit or just a regular beaten biscuit with a little thin slice of ham, a little mustard on there. It's a nice little sandwich. Mm. That's always good. Some type of green vegetable. Now asparagus would be good. Some people do leafy greens, of course, collard greens, those type. Those are pretty important. Usually some type of casserole dish, whether it's a corn casserole dish. Even I've seen a pimento cheese casserole dish also on the table. Mm. But there should just be a few important items on the table. And then, of course, you've got your Benedictine and pimento cheese to start with.
Yeah.
And you've got your mint juleps. So you're not feeling any pain by this point at all. And then we get from there, and to dessert. And a pie certainly would be appropriate.
How about a Derby pie?
A Derby pie would be appropriate. You can find many good recipes for Derby pie. You can do a chess pie, which is kind of like a buttermilk custard pie, which is a traditional pie of Kentucky. And if you want to get a little fancy, make some bourbon balls, for God's sake. Chop up some chocolate wafers and add a little bit of pecans and a little molasses and cinnamon and ginger and some cloves and maybe some chopped raisins. And you just form those into little balls and you're done.
And don't they there was a story about how they last forever.
They do last a long time. You could use vanilla wafers also. Actually, some chefs I've seen actually using the chocolate wafers instead. We use both. Why not?
Yeah.
So those are two very wonderful ingredients. So there's a template right there of a wonderful Kentucky Derby party, buffet for next week. We'll be back right after this.
The real issues.
The number one issue we hear across the Commonwealth is concerns about Biden's inflation.
KSRO, Sonoma County's News Talk. Does your business need advertising but cash flow is a challenge? Then contact us at the My Sonoma Deals program. It's a cashless program based on trade. Are you a restaurant, a golf course, a boutique, car wash, bowling alley, jewelry store, or florist? There are so many categories. Contact My Sonoma Deals now to find out if your business qualifies. Just go online to mysonomadeals.com and click on contact. That's mysonomadeals.com and click on contact.
North Bay Honor Flight is a Santa Rosa-based nonprofit whose mission is to transport our local veterans to visit their memorials in Washington, D.C. at no cost to the honored veteran. The goal is to honor the service of our Vietnam, Korea, and World War II veterans and give them the warm and celebratory homecoming they deserved but never received. Right now, we need volunteers and donations. Please join us in giving our veterans one final tour with honor. Go to northbayhonorflight.org. northbayhonorflight.org.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. That's right, it's Chick Days at the feed store in Sebastopol. Starting March 14th through June, the feed store will have baby chicks and everything you could possibly need to care for them, most especially the years and years of knowledge for knowing how to care for your new backyard brood. The feed store in Sebastopol, your one-stop shop for all your large and small animal feed and needs. Happy Chick Days!
Ungaro & Sons knows youth sports can be a powerful influence, inspiring, empowering, and transforming lives. When you support our young athletes with your time, equipment donations, and money, it really does make a difference. Because we care, underwriter Ungaro & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Electrical, and Solar urges you to choose your favorite sport and invest in the development of future leaders and role models. Contact a local youth sports program today and make a difference for Sonoma County youth.
Look for Ongaro & Sons at the North Bay Home Show April 27th and 28th at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds. Giveaways and drawings from HVAC, plumbing, electrical, and solar experts Ongaro & Sons.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Sardo Kitchen, Steve Gardner, along with Chef John Ash. And before we meet our special guest at the bottom of the hour, what's coming up in the Press Democrat, your series of great writings you do about once a month?
Thanks. You're very sweet. Well, we are, I think it's next week it'll be published in the Wednesday food section. It's about wild greens, those things that are growing all around us. And springtime is the best time because they're young and more tender and not so bitter and stuff like that. But
and can we find those around Sonoma County?
Yeah, I selected things that are everywhere, and often we don't know that they're edible.
That's part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So things, what are a few of those that would be featured next Wednesday?
I knew you were going to ask that. What are they? I'm blanking on them.
Well, with dandelion greens?
Dandelions, for sure, is a good one. And, you know, as dandelions get older, they get really bitter. But an interesting factoid about dandelions, if you pick them early in the day, the greens, and if they're mature, pick just the top three or four leaves and eat them. They're not as bitter, you know.
Interesting.
And they make the most delicious salad, you know. That, and you can see them in the market occasionally.
Well, look for that next Wednesday in the Press Democrat's food section. Back after this, we're going to Bourbon Land.
News Talk KSRO on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Simpson Sheet Metal is helping kids in our community to become million-word readers through Read on Sonoma. This year, 1,100 elementary students in 6 local schools are participating, earning prizes as they read. And Simpson Sheet Metal is proud to be a part of it. Here's Barbie Simpson, owner of Simpson Sheet Metal.
One of the things I cherish most in my life is my grandkids. Spending time with them gives me such great joy. Over the years, reading with them has evolved. Now, we read their school books and their weekly vocabulary words along with chapter books. As they've grown, I've seen their reading skills and comprehension increase, along with their interest in the world around them. Being a grandparent is one of the greatest joys of my life.
Lifetime outcomes for children who learn to read and build comprehension include better health, higher income, and increased graduation rates. Simpson Sheet Metal and Read on Sonoma, dedicated to improving children's lives in Sonoma County. ReadOnSonoma.org. Honey, we need to make reservations for Buckley for our vacation. He loves going to daycare at Paradise Pet Resorts. Let's see if they have room for boarding.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier to leave him, knowing they'll take care of him like he's their own.
Paradise Pet Resorts will take great care of your furry family member. You get to go away, and your pet gets a vacation. See for yourself on the webcams. Just download the app and look at all those wagging tails.
Dogs are pack animals who don't do well left alone all day. They need plenty of mental and physical exercise, as well as lots of opportunities to play, sniff, explore, and socialize. Doggy daycare is a practical solution for keeping your dog stimulated, as opposed to chewing, digging, and barking when you're not home.
Pets prefer Paradise. Pet tested, pet approved. Book now for boarding and daycare. Paradise Pet Resorts in Rohnert Park in Santa Rosa. ParadisePetResorts.com.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. John and I have been talking about Kentucky Derby for 38 years, and we thought we knew quite a lot about bourbon, didn't we?
Yeah.
Turns out we didn't know as much as we thought.
Well, this book just opened my eyes. I think we in our discussion about this, we thought, a book on bourbon. I thought it'd be very dry and, you know, scholarly and all of that kind of stuff. And this was, it just knocked my socks off. I thought I knew a bit about bourbon, and you certainly, since that's your home turf, know a great deal about bourbon. But I didn't know anything.
Well, we have the man that does know quite a lot about it, and it's one of the most entertaining books we've ever seen, and our library is overflowing with books about bourbon. This one will have a permanent place. It's called Bourbon Land, A Spirited Love Letter to My Old Kentucky. I know you think I'm going to say home, but I know, to my old Kentucky whiskey with 50 recipes, and the chef author is Edward Lee. Edward wrote two previous books that are both great, which we have in our library, called Buttermilk Graffiti and Smoke and Pickles. Mm. Thanks so much for joining us today, Edward. It's delightful to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. Is your restaurant in Louisville still going strong?
It's going strong, 22 years strong.
Wow, we should mention the name of your restaurant for people who are... So go ahead, I'll let you mention.
It's called 610 Magnolia, and if you're ever in Louisville, come on by, and if I'm there, we'll have a glass of whiskey together.
Wow, I bet you can't get a reservation next Saturday, can you?
No. It's been booked for quite a bit.
So, Vervinland, would you give us a brief history of how you ended up in Louisville?
Yeah, I mean, 22 years ago, I was, or 23 years ago, I was in New York City, had a restaurant, and actually, it was when 9/11 happened, and I was born in Brooklyn and lived in New York my whole life, and I never really left. And you know, after the tragedy, I kind of rented a car and took a road trip and thought I wanted to see the rest of the country. And one of the things on my bucket list was the Kentucky Derby. And I've always been kind of a, you know, I wouldn't say an aficionado, but I always liked drinking bourbon. So I thought, let's go to Kentucky. And I fell in love with it immediately and saw a restaurant opportunity. And, you know, I thought I was going to stay for 1 year and go back to New York. I really didn't plan on staying. And, you know, after a year, I really just embraced everything about it. And now it's been 22 years I've been there.
But not only did you fall in love with it, but you fell in love with someone, too, didn't you?
Yes, I got married with my beautiful wife, Diane, and we have a beautiful daughter together. So yeah, a lot's happened. I mean, I found my culinary voice. I found my true love. I found my daughter. So it's been a wild and a beautiful ride for the last 22 years.
So early in the book, there's a chapter, I guess, called Who is Bourbon? Not what is bourbon, but who is bourbon? And you have the most wonderful quotes in there, comparing it to other alcoholic offerings in there. I should let you do them, but I'll read a couple of them. But you talk about Irish whiskey, which you said is a cousin of bourbon. It's bourbon's distant cousin, is how you put it. And while I like him very much, after a drink or two, I can't understand a word he's saying, which I thought was great. But you had the same ideas about scotch and vodka and all of that kind of stuff.
Yes, you anthropomorphize these whiskeys beautifully. They're more than just a libation. They have very strong personalities you, don't they?
They do, and they have memories and connotations and experiences. You know, when I think about tequila, I don't think about a libation. I think about, you know, the young girl that introduced me to tequila when I was dating her in high school. And she drank way too much of it.
What was her name?
Her name, gosh. Lord.
No, it's okay.
Well, his wife might be listening.
Yeah, so that's true.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, I don't talk about ex-girlfriends. But you know, I think all of these things, you know, food included, they're much richer than just the recipe. They and especially with bourbon, they come to life. So, and it's about people and about places and experiences and memories.
So what's the difference? What between bourbon and whiskey? You know, I'm sort of this interloper here. I don't know a lot about either of them.
Well, the problem is that they're being used interchangeably the time, Edward.
Yeah. So whiskey is the larger category, right? So, so whiskey is any aged grain spirit, right? So any what we sometimes say, any brown water is whiskey. Think about it as the large umbrella that encompasses all the spirits. And so Irish whiskey, Canadian whiskey, Tennessee whiskey, Scotch, bourbon, they all fall under just the category of whiskey. So anything can be called whiskey. But then you get more specific definitions, right? So bourbon is very specific to America, 51% corn, charred new oak barrels. Scotch obviously has to come from Scotland. Irish whiskey obviously comes from Ireland. And so there's single malt, there's tons of categories, but we think of whiskey as the big umbrella, and then all the other ones fall under that umbrella with very specific definitions.
Okay. The chapters, thank you so much for making these really digestible chapters.
Yes.
They don't wander on for pages and get very esoteric and arcane. Whoever did the editing, kudos to them.
Maybe it was you.
Maybe it was you.
One of the things that, for my books, I don't hire, well, obviously I have a wonderful editor, but I don't hire a ghostwriter. I write all the chapters myself, and it takes a little bit longer. Actually, it takes a lot longer. But I'm very proud of that, and I really get to send the message that I want to. And, they're my words. So it's something that I do with all my books.
Just an overview of some of the chapters. The titles are so beautiful. How to Cook with Bourbon. Mm-hmm. Fire and Toast, How Important Cooperage Is. Bourbon During Prohibition, What Glass Should I Use? Ice Cubes and Whiskey, What's in a Label? And then the travelogue that you do. Oh, I love that the best part. The I-65, that's the corridor in Louisville, through the Southern Corridor. Then you have an area of the Western Corridor, the Central Corridor, the Eastern Corridor, all the bourbon stops that people should make. So this can function as a beautiful travelogue.
Yeah, because I wanted it not to be just the info. I didn't want it to be just a history book of bourbon. I wanted it to be something useful and practical. And if you do decide to make a wonderful trip to bourbon country, these are very handy. You can go down this highway, and I have recommendations not just for distilleries, but places to eat. Some curious museums and things to stop off. And there's so much here, and Kentucky is full of lively people and wonderful. And I guarantee you, you're not just going to drink whiskey. You're going to meet really fun people here as well. And I kind of wanted to infuse the idea of the people of Kentucky as well, not just the bourbon.
So, of course, a big part of the book is how to cook with bourbon. And you have some very specific directions. One of the things I thought was interesting is the importance of always reducing it, to drive off the alcohol in the bourbon if you're going to use it in a recipe.
Yeah. The last thing you'd be, so ethanol will evaporate faster than water. And the last thing you want, especially if you're using it in a warm application, is to sort of breathe in or taste warm ethanol, because it does have a choking effect on you, and it's just very unpleasant. Now, there are some, like dessert applications and cold applications, where you, especially with desserts and like bourbon balls and stuff, where you want a little bit of that alcoholic bite to it, so you may leave it in. But if you're using it in a sauce or a vinaigrette or something warm, you want to make sure to cook off that ethanol. And it doesn't take much, but it is something that is just an extra step required.
We're going to take a quick break, Edward. We'll come right back. There's so much to cover in the next few minutes in this beautiful new book that you've written. It's called Bourbon Land, A Spirited Love Letter to My Old Kentucky Whiskey. We'll touch on some of the great recipes, John, that call to you as a chef, some of the great stops along the way, and some of the people you've highlighted and written profiles about. That was part of the enjoyment of the book, too, is a couple of the great distillers, even one of the great corn growers of Kentucky, and some master bartenders, too. My hope is, Edward, when I come back in my next lifetime, instead of being named Steve Garner, a name that I like, I want to be, I want my name to be Dante Wheat Jr.
Yeah.
Man, that's got to be the greatest name in the world, Dante Wheat Jr. Edward Lee is our guest chef author, joining Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KS Ardo Kitchen. Back after this.
News Talk KSRO on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, 96.9 in Petaluma, and 94.5 in Sonoma at KSRO.com and on the KSRO app.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat, something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
You're in charge of a huge event, and everything's ready, except one thing.
Flowers?
No. How do you protect attendees? Santa Rosa's SoCo Private Security provides peace of mind for the smallest private event to the largest fairs and festivals. SoCo Private Security guards have the training and apparel to make your special event special. More info at SoCoPrivateSecurity.com. SoCo Private Security, the new breed in security.
Hi, I'm Jim Curry, manager of the Windsor branch at Exchange Bank. At Exchange Bank, we know Sonoma County. We also know it's a tough housing market. If you're looking for a local mortgage expert, our in-house loan consultants are here to help. Swing by today and let's talk mortgages. Exchange Bank, where your home story begins. Learn more at exchangebank.com.
Exchange Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender, NMLS number 643948. All loans subject to credit approval.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. That's right, it's Chick Days at the Feed Store in Sebastopol. Starting March 14th through June, the Feed Store will have baby chicks and everything you could possibly need to care for them, most especially the years and years of knowledge for knowing how to care for your new backyard brood. The Feed Store in Sebastopol, your one-stop shop for all your large and small animal feed and needs. Happy Chick Days!
SoCo Private Security is a local family-owned business based in Santa Rosa. The new management team has over five decades of security service. Whether you need fixed site, vehicle patrol, or special event security, SoCo Private Security can help. Shopping centers, HOAs, private residences, banks, hotels, and more have enjoyed peace of mind with SoCo Private Security since 2013. More info at SoCoPrivateSecurity.com. SoCo Private Security, the new breed in security.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the KSRO Kitchen this morning. So glad you're joining us. Our 38th year in the air, America's longest running radio food show. And it's high time we had a chance to chat with Edward Lee, chef author. New book, Bourbon Land, a spirited love letter to my old Kentucky whiskey with 50 recipes. Right in time to gift this to a friend or family member in time for the Kentucky Derby. John, you wanted to talk about a specific item with Edward.
I was just fascinated by the things you included in the book, and one was a little section on ice cubes and whiskey. So you have... There are different shapes of ice cubes and all this stuff. Do you have a choice and why?
Yeah, I mean, ice cubes are you know, was kind of this trendy thing now. And so depending on the ice cube and the shape that you use, you'll have a different rate of melting. And obviously when ice cube melts, it turns into water, so that dilutes your whiskey. Either faster or slower, depending on what you want. So starting with the least rate of melt, you have like, you know, your big square cube that fits into your rocks glass, which is a favorite amongst whiskey drinkers. You have globes, right? They're perfectly shaped spheres. And then you go down to your smaller cubes, your semicircles, and you know, these are things that people take very seriously, and how, what water you use to do it. Now, you know, there's and then obviously you get down to, like, your cocktails, like your mint juleps, where you're using crushed ice. So those are also very popular. You know, at the end of the day, though, I do make it a point to say, like, you know, you can drink your whiskey with some chipped ice in a plastic cup, and that's just fine too. So we're not too sticky about what you should be drinking.
Well, that was the joy of your book. Although you have access to and know the greatest people in the world of bourbon, you are anything but an elitist, and that comes through in the book. So thank you for that.
And I think in general, you know, bourbon historically has been a working class drink, you know, and from its very inception, it's been something that's been made in stills in people's backyards. So when we talk about it, it's slightly different from, say, a cognac or a scotch, which is a sort of a, you know, more of a nobleman's drink. So I think there's always a spirit of sort of an everyman kind of drink versus something that's, you know, elitist or special.
I was thrilled that you highlighted a non-GMO corn farmer.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
You know, obviously corn being, by law, bourbon has to be made with 51% corn. So obviously corn is a really important element in bourbon. And that's also where a lot of the flavor is coming from. So, you know, what I do in this book is I treat bourbon not so much as a spirit, but as an ingredient. And my goal when I first set out to write this book was, how do I, if bourbon is an ingredient, how do I go down the rabbit hole of finding out where the flavor of bourbon comes from? And obviously one of the big, big factors is corn. So I really wanted to do a deep dive into corn and how they're growing and who's growing it. A lot of the corn used in bourbon is sort of commodity field corn. So it's not the corn that you and I are eating at the dinner table. It's a much starchier, drier, harder corn. And they come from, you know, farms all over the region. But there is a move right now amongst some of the more luxury brands to use non-GMO, organic, to use local farmers, and it makes a difference in the final product. So Hoppy Hinton was one of the farmers that I got connected to. And, you know, generational farmer, just a very interesting person, someone who it's interesting, right, because he dedicates his whole life to raising the corn that ends up as whiskey in your glass.
So,
and so a true noble person.
It's so interesting. Which I didn't know. I mean, Steve, because he's from that part of the world, knew all about it. But that in addition to corn, because you mentioned that 51% of it has to come from corn, that wheat, rye, barley, and now other grains are also being used, which I assume must have a big impact on flavor.
It does. It does. And so generally, you know, traditionally it was corn, and then, you know, next most popular was wheat, rye, malted barley, and sometimes just regular barley. And, you know, but just because it's 51% corn doesn't mean that it always has to be exactly 51% corn. So there's a lot of distilleries that are using up to 70% corn, right? And so some of the what that's called is the mash bill, right, or the recipe. And you know, recently people have been more open about their mash bills. But in the past, and some distilleries still are, very, very secretive about what percentages of each grain they're using in their recipes. They keep it very close to the chest, though. And depending on what other grains you use, you will have a softer, like if you use a lot of wheat, you'll get a wheated bourbon. You'll have a, you know, softer, almost sweeter flavored whiskey versus rye. If you do a high rye whiskey, you'll have something that has a little more bite, a little spicier finish, a little sharper flavor.
Other important components to the final taste in that bottle is the type of oak that the whiskey is matured in, and also where the oak is reposing for those years. Talk about those elements.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the most beautiful places on the planet that I went to was researching this book. I ended up on a tree farm in Gravel Switch, Kentucky. And when you think of a tree farm, you think kind of rows and rows of trees like tomatoes. But it wasn't the case. It was basically a wild forest that this family manages. And basically, they are into forest management. And so they look at canopies and overstories, and they take care of wildlife, and they take care of these trees. But, you know, there's these incredible, tall, strong, straight oak trees that shoot all the way up to the sky. And they take anywhere from 75 to 100 years to mature before they're allowed to cut them down. And these are the oak trees that get shaved into the staves that get dried, bent, shaped into barrels that then get charred and aged the whiskey in. And that is a huge component of flavor. We wouldn't have bourbon the way we do now without oak trees. Mm. And so sometimes when we take a bottle of bourbon off the shelf and we look at it and it says a five-year-old bourbon, now I look at it and I chuckle and I go, that's not 5 years old. Because if you really go back to the tree, that's a 105-year-old whiskey that we're drinking.
So after the whiskey, the bourbon goes into these barrels, where do the barrels slumber for all those years?
They stay at the distillery. They are housed in a room called a rickhouse, which is basically a huge warehouse. And if you drive through the countryside of Kentucky, you'll see them all over the place, these rickhouses that are holding this, you know, very valuable juice. And they slowly age over time. The rickhouses are not air-conditioned. They're not temperature-controlled. We rely on the four seasons of Kentucky to age them in a cycle. And, you know, every year they get, you know, slightly more color, more caramel, more brown, more delicious. And every year, a master distiller will walk around the barrels, taste them. Depending on where the barrels live in the rickhouse, they age and flavor differently. So master distiller goes in there and, you know, pops open a barrel, takes out a little slug, tastes it, and ultimately blends all these barrels together to come up with a consistent product year after year.
So one of the questions you have in the book is, what is moonshine and is it related to bourbon?
Is it?
So what is moonshine?
Well, moonshine, so it's very interesting because it is and it isn't, right? Moonshine is obviously the illegal, and that's a very important word because it is federally illegal to make your own whiskey. But it's people who sort of are making whiskey or making any distillate in their backyard using an illegal still. Obviously, moonshine became very, very popular during Prohibition, before then it was sort of, you know, overlooked if you had a little still in your backyard and you were drinking it. But during Prohibition, obviously alcohol was banned all across the U.S. And these stills that sometimes were just made for, you know, buddies were now going into major production, making bourbon and whiskey and all kinds of, you know, illicit alcohols for public consumption, which, you know, during that time gave rise to incredible amount, you know, gave rise to the mafia and Al Capone and all these different criminal organizations.
NASCAR.
NASCAR.
And also NASCAR. It's a very little known fact that moonshine was really the beginning of NASCAR because they needed, you know, so all the illicit moonshine and whiskey was being made basically in the American South, but they weren't drinking it. Most of it were being drunk in speakeasies in New York and Chicago and other cities up north. Well, you needed to transport it somewhere, and that's where the mafia came in. And so these people created like souped up engines for these cars because they needed to outrun the police when they were, you know, caught on a highway. And so they created these incredibly fast engines And that was the birth of what we now know as NASCAR.
And want to mention, if you want a really good evening's entertainment, rent Thunder Road. Robert Mitchum, Robert Mitchum and his son wrote this, and that's a story of how they outfoxed the revenue, basically, outran them.
So we have to talk about, because we just have a couple of minutes left, the recipes, because you're such an accomplished chef. And these sound really interesting and things that I wouldn't even think of trying, but I'm gonna now. So I'll mention one, bourbon cured salmon that you put together in a salad. And it's such a beautiful picture.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. You know, one of the things is like, there's a lot of bourbon recipes out there and but a lot of them are like barbecue, you know, throw some in your barbecue sauce or throw some on the grill. And I wanted to write a book where, because I've been cooking with bourbon for 20 years, and there's such a wide breadth of what you can do with bourbon. It has so many different flavors in it, and it's not just for throwing some into your barbecue sauce. And one of the things that we do is we cure slices of salmon in bourbon, and it makes for a really wonderful cured salmon flavor. And you can use it in your salads and build, you know, just interesting flavors. Like, you know, you wouldn't think about it at first, but bourbon actually goes really well with Asian flavors because it's aggressive and smoky and can stand up to the spice and boldness of Asian flavors. So there's a lot of recipes that are kind of unexpected, and I think that's a nice part about the book.
Let me call out just one recipe before we have to turn you loose, and you spoke about the affinity for Asian flavors. You write in the book, it's near your favorite recipe. Do you know which one that is?
My favorite recipe in the book? Did I say it's my favorite?
You did. That's a quote. Near my favorite recipe. It's pork meatballs in bourbon gochujang and coconut broth.
Yeah.
And you have gochujang, the Korean sauce, play a portion of that, and also in the glazed chicken wings, right? The gochujang.
So no, and it's something that, I don't know, just that to me, you know, Korean chili, the gochujang is a fermented Korean chili spice, and it's got a lot of umami. It's not just heat. It's heat with sweetness and layers and umami and depth. And I think bourbon is similar, right? Bourbon is not just a whiskey. It's a whiskey, but with sweetness and leather and hay and umami and minerality and bitterness. And so They just play really well together.
The book is Bourbon Land, a spirited love letter to my old Kentucky whiskey, with 50 recipes by chef author Edward Lee. Make sure it's on your table for your Kentucky Derby party next Saturday. It's well worth taking a look at. Edward, thanks for spending time with John and me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great.
If we ever get to Louisville, we'll be there at 610 right. Magnolia.
Please do.
Great. Thanks again. Edward Lee on the Good Food Hour. We'll meet again next Saturday.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah. And next Saturday is Kentucky Derby.
So we'll do more toasting.
Yeah.
Delivering the facts.
The source I can trust.
KSRO, Sonoma County's FM News Talk at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and 96.9 in Petaluma.
Morning, Danny.
Whoa, hey, Aunt Laura. Morning. Wasn't expecting you.
Well, you kind of got me thinking about Gotelli Plumbing.
Yeah? What about?